Today's episode of Rob's Podcast is sponsored by LegalZoom. You know, there's lots of great reasons that smart business people trust LegalZoom. For starters, if you want to incorporate, form an LLC, a nonprofit, file a patent or trademark, get a DBA or more, LegalZoom provides you with the help you need because over the past decade, more than a million business owners just like you have gotten started with LegalZoom. It's the legal alliance that you know that you could use and trust. LegalZoom is your first stop when you need advice from an attorney. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but they built a network of independent attorneys in most states to provide legal advice and other useful services to help you run your business. So if you need a contract reviewed or strategy advice on incorporating or forming an LLC, whatever your question, start with LegalZoom. And as always, they provide complete transparency with upfront pricing, customer reviews, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Maybe even a 155,000% satisfaction guarantee. So make the smart choice for your business at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter Rob at checkout for even more savings. Again, that's Rob at checkout for more savings at LegalZoom.com. Legal help is here. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we have a special show for you today because Josh Wigler and I have just finished up at least posting the Evolution Strategy Volume 2, and this is our first chance in which we are going to be taking questions and talking about completing Volume 2. Hello, Josh Wigler.
Oh, hi, Rob. Oh my God. Daylight. You've let me out of the basement.
Josh, we haven't spoken in so long.
It's been since we were recording. This has been, what, 2 hours?
A few more hours than that, but yeah.
About 2 hours, 3 hours.
Second time on the phone today.
Second time and the third time on the phone today. We've been talking a lot.
Third time.
And you have a great cell service in your basement. I really appreciate it. It allows me to browse the internet while you have me locked down there. It's really nice.
No problem.
Could use some AC down there and a little bit of food would be nice.
No problem. I just want you to have like survivor-like conditions.
You know, I know. I appreciate it. But even they get some rice. You're not really hooking that up.
Look, what do you want?
I know. We're on a budget here, so I get it. You gotta conserve costs where you can.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we are here to do today is, for many of you guys, you know that Josh and I have been working on this project for over a year now. We thought we'd be able to finish it in a year, but it didn't quite work out that way.
Nope. Still going.
Josh and I started watching Survivor from the beginning back in July of 2014. Here we are headed into August of 2015.
Oh, man. I even think it might have been late June.
Might have been. And we started watching and talking and recording, and this is all part of making the Evolution of Strategy. While we started recording then, we released the first chapter. We did one Friday every week during the 10 weeks in between Survivor San Juan del Sur and Survivor Worlds Apart. And those chapters dropped in volume one a week for 10 weeks in a row. And we just released this past week, Survivor Heroes versus Villains, chapter 20, because we had been dropping one chapter every Friday between this past Friday and the end of Survivor Worlds Apart.
And we're still going.
And then this Friday kicks off volume 3, which starts with Survivor Nicaragua and goes all the way through to Survivor Worlds Apart, which will come out the Friday before Survivor Second Chances. So we're really just taking this off season wire to wire on the Evolution of Strategy.
Very seriously, we're taking this off season.
Yeah.
Survivor is off television, except in our household.
Yeah.
And there's no TV in the basement, so I just have to listen and I have to picture in my memory what things look like.
And so, if you're listening to this and you're saying, okay, and what is the point of this show? The point of this show is that we are, for the first time, taking feedback from the listeners of the Evolution Strategy to talk about things that we have discovered or learned or laughed about through the first 20 seasons of Survivor.
Yeah, we've had a really active comment section on a lot of the chapters, but we haven't gotten a chance to address you guys directly yet. So this is very fun. Really excited to do that. Excited to take a walk back down memory lane of all of the different crazy chapters we've released so far. A lot of stuff that I probably don't remember, and a lot of stuff that I would like to forget.
Right.
But all very fun stuff. It's been a real blast. All kidding aside, it's been a great year and change.
And just to put things in perspective as to where we are now, Josh and I just started recording the Evolution of Strategy Chapter 26, talking about survivor Karamoan.
All right. And you actually, this is going to go over people's heads until a few weeks from now, but we had a really meta moment in recording Chapter 25, Survivor Philippines, where you pulled the curtain back a little bit and revealed a little something about the process of how we record these things.
Yes.
Where sometimes we will stop down in between parts. Believe it or not, we won't actually sit down for 10 hours straight and record these things all the way through. We take breaks every now and then. So we've taken a tiny, tiny bit of a break today in our Karamoan recording. We're about, what, 2 hours into the thing? Is that fair to say?
Yes.
It's about 2 hours into the thing. We've talked about how many minutes of the first episode so far?
Three.
Probably like five. five minutes.
They just introduced the returning favorites.
Yeah, so we just talked about that. We just talked about some snubs in the casting of Karamoan, and we are at the two-hour mark. So, good Lord. That's what you're, you're getting into. And it's been really fun. That sounds intense. And it is, but it's all really, really fun.
Now, back when we started the Evolution of Strategy with Chapter 1 back in Borneo, which you could hear for free at evolutionofstrategy.com.
World of difference going back to the Borneo chapter, by the way.
Right.
There was no Wanda.
In terms of a lot of things.
There was no Wanda. There was no Sad Lil yet.
None of them.
No, there was no Sylvia.
We didn't know what we were doing back then. That chapter was just under 6 hours, I think, in the total recording of it.
Okay.
And we just posted Survivor Heroes versus Villains, which I believe the runtime on that was 17 hours and 17 minutes.
That's fine. That's what normal people do in their free time. I don't remember at what point I said this, but it's insane that, you know, two people in their 30s are spending so much time just talking about Survivor all day long.
Well, now we know it a little bit better.
A little tiny bit better. We know better.
It probably like 10 or 15% better than when we started. So I think it's been worth it.
It's been worth it. It's good. Yeah, it's good stuff. Good for you.
Yeah. In the Survivor Philippines finale, where Jeff Probst thanks the fans for watching the show for 12 years, he says that they have done over 350 tribal councils. So Josh and I have also, within the last 13 months, discussed 350 different tribal councils as we've gone through this as well.
And you're going to edit out the part where I vomited when that statistic was revealed, when I just like stress vomited?
Yes.
Yeah, that was like a 2 minute break I needed right there.
Yeah. But amazingly, a lot of people have been along with us for the ride throughout this. And somehow people have been keeping up. It was hard enough for us to record these chapters in a short amount of time. I don't know how some of you guys are listening to the whole things in a week.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, we released Heroes Villains last Thursday. I believe, and we had people who were done with that 17-hour plus chapter by Saturday, maybe even some by Friday night. So that's dedication, Holmes. That's pretty good. I'm impressed. It really is a marathon. I was describing this to somebody that it's like a marathon if you were a chicken without your head.
Damn.
And it really does feel like that sometimes, keeping up with the schedule and watching everything and taking copious notes. I don't know what your note-taking process is like, Rob, but I'm basically transcribing every single episode.
Yeah, how do you do that? Because I'm often impressed with the level of detail that you have. How do you do that?
I destroy my back as I huddle over my laptop, which I'm watching the episodes on. I have a text edit up, and I am just transcribing everything that I am seeing and trying to get things as close to word for word when people are talking as humanly possible, stopping, going back a little bit. It's a process.
Yeah.
It's a process. It probably takes me about, every episode is about 42 minutes-ish, you know, excluding premieres and finales that are a little bit longer. Every episode is about 42 minutes, and it probably takes me somewhere between 50 and 60 minutes to clear an episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is stuff that we never talked about on these
shows. We haven't talked process. We haven't talked about that. It's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
But it is intense. And for us to, you know, all the hours that we pour into doing the thing, for people to be pouring hours into actually listening to it. You know, there was a period of time when you and how far into recording were we when volume one was released? I know that the first chapter that we recorded when people had actually put their ears on the thing was the Fiji chapter.
Right. So we had recorded the first 13 chapters before Christmas of this year.
Yeah.
And then I went back to New York for Christmas, and then the volume one was released the Friday after San Juan del Sur came out.
Right. And then
San Juan del Sur ended.
Right. And then Fiji was the first chapter we were recording after people had started listening to it. And there was a long stretch of time where you and I were just like, is anyone going to listen to this? Are we just, you know, speaking into the void? Is anybody actually going to pay attention to this thing? And a lot of people have. And, you know, there have been critiques along the way, but overwhelmingly the response has been really, really sweet and nice and really touching for me. So, that's been a real thrill for me is finally getting to the stage where people are actually listening to the nonsense that we're spewing out.
We were well into this thing before anybody heard it, and people could have hated it. I'm sure some people do hate it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that was a bit of a big risk. Made a big move.
Big moves. Listen, it's all about big moves. You can't win the evolution of strategy without making big moves.
Yeah. Do you realize that there are major motion pictures that are completed in less time than it's taken us to get through the evolution of strategy?
Yeah, yeah. Entire seasons of television come and go in the time that we have been recording this thing. And by the time that we're done with this thing, I think that I have it on the calendar. I think you and I are going to be done recording, knock on freaking wood, because if we're not done recording at this point, we're in big trouble. By, I think, Labor Day, that's when we're going to be done. And a season of television would have been conceived of and produced and shot and released, and they are well into pre-production on season two, if not filming like the fifth episode.
In reality, now, three or four seasons of Survivor had been filmed in the time it took us to do this.
Yeah, yeah. We started recording this with Kagi-an was the most recently released season of Survivor, and now we are facing the world where we are 2 weeks away from talking about that
right.
season.
Right, San Juan del Sur probably just finished filming around the time we started doing this.
Yes, I think so. That sounds about right. Yeah, Mike Holloway was just about to hop on a plane to win Survivor. So Kim was just about to hop on a plane to go back to Nicaragua and be the first person voted out after everything that she had gone through. Momentous moment in Survivor history.
Also, another thing that was not what we were... First of all, we never thought it was going to be this long. We thought we'd be able to finish it a lot faster. But also, the idea of releasing a chapter a week sort of like was born out of that... Boy, it's going to be really hard to edit this thing. I don't know how we're going to get this all done in one shot.
Yeah, well, you know, hats off to you, man. You know, Rob is the guy who is editing all of this down, and we've got the assistance of a lot of people who listen along early on and help us out with some of the proof listening and the editing and all of that. But you're the man who's putting this stuff together on top of everything else that you're doing. So, and you've got another baby on the way. You've got a baby here. You've got Nicole. You've got a life to live, and you are recording.
Nobody ever said I had a life.
You're recording these insanely long chapters, and you're editing them down. You're an impressive guy, to me at least,
yeah.
Rob. You're not the Rob that sucks when it comes to work and on these podcasts and on this audiobook. So it's really crazy that you're doing all
well,
this.
Well, much appreciated, and I want to give a quick shout out to Matt Holtzclaw, Paul Borges, and Christine Raddis, who are the people that are listening ahead to these chapters and do a really fantastic job of going through.
Yeah, so if you're looking for the spoilers, those are the people to hunt down. They can
they know the spoilers.
Yeah, but we'll be able to source that real quick. Is the upside,
right? But we're not here to talk so much about our process as we are to answer questions about things we've learned
100%.
Through 20 seasons and things that people want to know our take on and call us out on, because we've gone through 20 seasons and now we know 10-15% more about Survivor than we did when we started.
This would have been a really good thing to do when those seasons were fresh in our mind. This is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Social studies division.
Let me start here, because to us, back in July of 2014, when we first really got the ball rolling on this, it would never occurred to us that in less than a year that there would be a thing that was called Survivor Second Chance.
Yes, that's true.
And we never would have imagined back on that first day when we started talking about Survivor Borneo that Kelly Wigglesworth would be a participant in a season of Survivor that would be coming up at the time we finish recording this book.
That's absolutely true.
And so for us, that there were a lot of people that we got to talk about that it actually was like, oh, this was good that we got to talk about them because they're very fresh in our mind because they're going to be playing Survivor.
Yeah.
And so through the first few seasons of people, there were people that we talked about that we never had any idea that we're going to be going back. And then there reached a point around the time that we started recordings in Token Teens and Samoa that we started to really start to get the sense of who was going to be on there. And then right around the time of Heroes versus Villains, we knew who was going to be in that casting mix finally. But one of the people that we got 100% wrong was back in the Evolution of Strategy Chapter 7. You and I talked about Andrew Savage.
Yes, we did.
And how Andrew Savage was not a returnee and would never be a returnee. And we did not get it wrong. Let me read you a comment that came to us from Miles Nye.
Let's hear it. Oh, the great Miles Nye.
The great Miles Nye. And we do have a feedback page on all of these Evolution of Strategy chapters. That the way that the links are set up, it's robiswebsite.com/TEOS7. So we bounced around and pulled some of the questions that you guys had from here and then also questions from Facebook.
You're just kicking the door down. Anyone's going to come through now.
And read the comments?
Yeah, and read the spoilers.
I guess so. Look, careful when you talk about spoilers in Survivor World.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Read the Evolution of Strategy spoilers.
Yeah, touchy subject.
Yes. So, Miles Nye wrote to us on the comment page for Evolution Strategy Chapter 7, said, I think the assessment of Andrew Savage is spot on. He is overrated. If the same player had not been wearing a suit and had not been named Savage, he would have been rightly disregarded. Imagine the same player in Bubba's body from Vanuatu and named Bubba. About as good as Bubba.
Wow!
So, let's talk about our call back then.
A biting critique from Miles Nye.
Yes.
Bubba!
Let's talk about our call where we said Andrew Savage. And that was something that we have been called out on in the many months since we released Evolution Strategy Chapter 7 back in like January or February. And here we are with Andrew Savage now being a person who has competed in Survivor 31.
Yeah, well, we talked about it. If memory serves, we talked about how Andrew Savage was a guy that you had heard about, somebody who is always being talked about as being in the mix. He is, you know, kind of, it's known that he has had a friendship with Jeff Probst over the years, that these are two. He even said it in your interview with him, I think, in the lead up to Second Chance. Like, yeah, we got sushi dinners and stuff. We wouldn't really talk about Survivor all that much. He's always, you know, been somebody that you've heard of as in the mix. You and I thought that his time had passed. We thought that his time had passed. And on top of that, that what is there really to see? You know, based on what we were looking at in Pearl Islands, I don't think either of us were terribly impressed with his gameplay. Rather impressed with his posterior.
Sure.
I mean,
my ass.
His ass is not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. So am I mad to see his ass back on Survivor in a couple of weeks? I'm not mad about it. Was I clamoring for it? Not necessarily. Was I voting for him in the run-up to Second Chance? I was not.
Yeah. You did not endorse Andrew Savage?
No, there were other people on the list that I wanted to see above.
Because you made official endorsements.
I did.
I did not.
Yes. I don't remember who I officially endorsed.
But not Andrew Savage.
Not Andrew Savage.
I was actually surprised during the voting because if I was going to prognosticate who was going to get on and who wasn't, I think I would have had Andrew Savage on the outside looking in, not from exit poll data or anything like that, just from, boy, I don't know if there's a clamoring for Andrew Savage, but I was actually surprised during the campaign because it did feel like from Survivor fans, many of whom I saw posting online, that people did like Andrew Savage and they did want him to come back. And I think that you and I maybe had underestimated how many people there were like that, but there was a significant amount of people that wanted to see Andrew Savage come back.
Our fingers were not on the pulse.
No, and they're not always.
Of the Savage love.
Yeah.
Obviously there was enough of a clamoring to get Andrew Savage on because he's on. He made it. He did it. Good job. And I think, you know, now that he is on, well, first off, I thought that he wasn't going to make it. I thought that he was going to, I thought that the Terry Dietz cancellation was going to happen. I thought that you could really only have Terry or Savage. And I thought that it was going to be Terry. And I thought that Savage was going to be left hanging at the door. Of course, I also thought Shane Powers was going to get in there, probably on the Savage spot. That was a surprise to me. But Savage made it through. And I'm excited about it because there are a couple of those old schoolers who didn't make the cut. You know, we didn't get T-Bird on there, which broke my heart. We didn't get Shane on there, which broke my heart. But we do have so many people. Like Kimmy Kappenberg is back. That's insane to me. Savage is back. Wasn't a guy that I was necessarily clamoring for, but he does represent one of the classic seasons of Survivor. Survivor Pearl Islands still has so much love behind it. And we're getting somebody from Pearl Islands there. And I think that that's been something that's been really fun to see in some of the recent returnee seasons, or really the first Blood versus Water that brought a guy like Jervis back and brought Tina Wesson back. And now we're seeing in Second Chances where it was a fan voted thing. So many classic players, so many old school players coming back. That's really fun. And even if Savage isn't a guy that I have a ton of love for, I'm at least excited to see him representing an era that I hope never is forgotten in Survivor lore.
Did you hear that all of the cast of Survivor Pearl Islands had gotten together to watch the finale that night and see if Andrew Savage was going to go back?
Wait, I wasn't invited.
Everybody said they were going to let me know when the party was.
They said that they all had their own plans that night. Everyone lied to me.
Poor Lil, never even got invited to the party.
Oh my God. And what about me? I wasn't there. Where's my invitation?
Who lost Krista's invitation?
Oh my God. Oh, that's so sad. Krista and Lil left at the door again. Should Krista and Lil have been in the mix for Survivor Second Chance? I guess it would have been Lil's third chance.
Yeah, the Redemption Island people, I mean, they were in the mix. I don't know, Stephanie Valencia went to Redemption Island, she came back. Michaela went to Redemption Island, or they didn't come back into the game, but at least they had a second chance to get in.
Right.
So, I'm not sure where we put, like, Burton and Lil and people who were outcasts and came back in.
Would you be down to see Burton back?
I feel like we kind of got that. I don't know what we're going to necessarily get out of a Burton return.
Burton return?
Yeah.
Of all of the Pearl Islanders, is Savage the guy to bring back?
Well, are we counting Fair Play? Because I feel like a Fair Play return would be interesting.
Not for a second chance.
Boy, I mean, who else are we talking about? Rhino, we're talking about...
Oh my God, what's the name of the one that you had a crush on?
Jebediah Kovad?
Who did you have a crush
Michelle
on?
Michelle Cesaro?
Michelle, that's right. No, I don't even remember her name.
Yeah, I think it's probably between him and Burton.
Yeah.
Well, do I count or not? I don't know.
Sorry, Will. You can be invited to the Evolution of Strategy wrap-up party, but that's going to be it.
I really get the sense that Big Lil probably doesn't want to do Survivor again.
You think that she'll say no? She'll say no to that.
Well, nobody asked me.
Nobody asked her.
Maybe I would do it. Maybe I would.
They never got back to her.
Never got back to me.
Yeah, very sad. Lynn. Very. How about a round two for Austin?
No, I think we're good.
No?
I think we're good.
Give the guy some clothes and he might do okay.
He might do okay, but I think that he might be persona non grata.
Oh, man. Well, that's some bull, honestly.
Yeah.
That's an overblown quit. The guy had no clothes.
Hey, it's
he was
a
also
thing.
Drunk the whole time.
It's a thing in the show and in the Survivor fan community. There is quit shaming.
Yeah, quit shaming.
And if you are a person who is a quitter, the whole system breaks down and we cannot ever accept you as a Survivor person again.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
It's one thing if you get medically evacuated, but if you leave the game of your own volition, you have a stigma attached to you which can never be washed away.
All right.
Is there an example of somebody?
Who quit and then came back?
Yeah, and again, we're not talking about like, oh, Jenna Maresca walked out of the game to go and be with her mom. Like, we're not counting that.
I wasn't going to float that out there, but how about the people who say Colton quit the first time?
Well, I think then nobody was saying that Colton quit the first time except for Jeff Probst. And then when Colton quit the second time, then he got that.
Well, there's talk of Dana from Survivor Philippines, right? At the reunion there, she's asking if she can have another shot, and Probst says there's the case to be made.
The line was very muddy on Dana.
Case to be made. The line is muddy on how much Jeff Probst meant what he said.
Mm, yes. And who knows whether or not she was medevaced. I mean, it would flip a coin as to what that was.
Well, maybe fair play can buck the trend at some point in the future. But just getting back to Savage
As a quitter?
I think as a quitter who could potentially come back.
I mean, technically, they took his torch out.
I know, but Probst thinks of him as a quitter.
Yeah. Again.
Getting back to Savage for a sec, what are your thoughts on Savage being back and us being wildly wrong about that prediction?
I love it when we're wrong.
Yeah, me too. It's great.
Because that means the unpredictable things happen. That's what's fun.
Yeah.
If we knew everything that's happened, then you would go look for what the spoilers are for everything.
Right. But in terms of him actually being back, Savage getting a second shot, is that exciting to you? Not just the fact that we were wrong.
I'm so excited about this upcoming Survivor season. And it's to the point where I try not to think about it and talk about it because it's still kind of far away. We're inside 2 months, but it's still a ways away.
Yeah.
I don't think that he will do particularly great.
Okay.
But we'll see.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that his leadership style may not be loved by whatever group of people he's with.
Okay.
And I don't know how well he'll be able to play nice with others and people who are returning players who won't be looking for him to be the leader this time around.
Okay.
Can he create a different role for himself? Potentially.
Mm.
I don't see it, but it doesn't mean it can't happen.
From what we saw when we reviewed the tape, and we weren't thinking about a return appearance in mind, but you would think that he's got a speed. And probably not too many others.
I think that he would be better in a season if you brought him back like for a returning player and a bunch of new players.
Yes.
And I think that he would be great. Like if he would have gotten medevaced out of the game and he could have been one of the people on Philippines where he could have been like instead of Russell Swan, here's Andrew Savage and here's with him with a group of five people. I think that would have been a good spot for him.
Does that Matt Singh do well?
The Andrew Savage, Matt Singh, I think it does better.
Oh, man.
Be hard to do worse.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that they actually do better because then they have three strong people on that tribe instead of just Malcolm and Denise and Russell Swan, who was strong but really couldn't do anything in the water.
Yeah, get him out of the water.
Get him out of the water.
Get him on the dock.
So I think that would actually be a better spot for Andrew Savage to come back than a returning player season, but who knows?
Okay.
I've got another question for you.
Shoot.
This one comes to us from the Australia section. This is from robswebsite.com/TEOS2.
My favorite season of Survivor.
Really enjoying this rewatch so far. Do you guys think that sometimes bringing people back from early seasons like Colby, like Tina, like Scoopin to later strategy seasons hurts their legacy, not in terms of a player, but in terms of a character? Another interesting thing as we had these people who came back and played again just now from seasons that we didn't know they were going to bring anybody back from, do you think that potentially the legacy of the character of these people that came back, like a Savage, like a Kelly Wigglesworth, like a Jeff Varner, like a Terry Dietz, like a Kimmy.
Is that going to get ruined?
Yes.
It's funny because, I mean, we just talked about this in the chapter that we recorded, not released yet, in Philippines. You know, that was a big topic of conversation in talking about the Mike Scoopin and Russell Swan games in particular. Yeah, it's a risk. It's a risk. I think it's a risk for anybody who returns to the game. Look no further than a guy like JT, who is somebody that we did talk about in the first two volumes, obviously. JT, you know, all but MIA completely from the Survivor community now, has a really strong win in Token Chains. Some would argue that we did not give him enough credit. I'm sure we'll get into that here. But he has a strong win in Token Chains. He has a pretty disappointing showing in 20. Does that ruin his legacy? I think for some people it does. It's the risk you run. The other piece of it is you could beat Tyson, who comes back, has a horrible second performance, then comes back and wins the game in a really decisive way your third time out. You could be a Cochran who comes in your first time, has a terrible performance, comes back on your second time out and wins the game. And I think, especially in the case of someone like Tina, I actually think that Tina, we haven't gotten to the recording of it yet. We haven't rewatched it yet. In Blood versus Water, in my mind, I love Tina on that season. So it can go either way. There's risks in any of these directions. I think with somebody like Jeff Varner and with Kimmy Kappenberg, you know, people who Kimmy didn't make the merge, Jeff didn't make the jury. What's there to really tarnish? You know, is there a ton of risk on those two in particular? Really, what's the risk for Kimmy? I think there's only upside for Kimmy. You know, even if Kimmy was like the first boot or something, it would probably be a very memorable first boot. Jeff Varner, at least if he doesn't step down for peanut butter, he's probably a step up from where he was last time. I don't know. I think in cases of people like that who didn't even make the jury on their first season, I really don't see anything but upside for them. But maybe I'll be proven gloriously wrong.
I think the question is speaking more to how the first few seasons and, you know, wherever you want to say the show became more strategy focused and less character based. Will it seem like whoever comes back from those early seasons is less like themselves because the show is less focused on character at this point in time and more focused on strategy?
Yeah, and that is an interesting question. Will they be just, you know, completely unrecognizable? I hope not. And again, I would point to Tina, who I think is a good example of somebody who came back and was pretty much Tina. But the way that the show has changed over the years, it is so much more game focused than it was when these people played their first time. And I think that could serve some of these people, or it might not. And we'll just have to wait and see.
One of the things that we got a lot of questions about was the rankings of the winners. Now, I'd prefer not to disclose what the rankings of the winners are in terms of my personal winner rankings, just because I think a lot of people are not caught up to the point that we are. And I think that it's fun for people to hear where the winners are going to get ranked in the specific seasons when they listen to these chapters. So I don't want to ruin that. What do you think of that decision?
You mean past 20 or
no,
even up to 20?
Up to 20. Because I feel like there's a very small group of people that have gotten through all the material that we've posted on this.
Your call. Hey, these are your winner rankings. I cannot say that enough. These are Rob Cesternino's winner rankings. You can do what you want with them.
Okay. So people have been somewhat hard on the rankings. Again, some people violently disagree with what I've done. Very few people have said, hey, good job with that. And I guess this is going to be somewhat of a spoiler in terms of where people are ranked, is that I don't have either of Sandra's wins particularly high. I rank them separately on my winner rankings.
Yes.
But I have said that I think the best three Survivor players are Boston Rob, Parvati, and Sandra.
Yes, you have said that.
And a lot of people have said that they would like me to address that, to try to reconcile those things.
And I did my best at the end of the Heroes Villains chapter to ask you about that, because I didn't hide it. I was surprised. I was surprised, and I was having a hard time reconciling it myself. How you can say that Sandra is one of the top three poster Survivor players and managed to rank, you know, fairly lower on the winner rankings. It was confusing for me as well.
I do take these things very seriously, and I do try to think about these things before I come on and talk about them with you guys. And so in terms of the rankings that I do, in terms of individual season winners, those rankings that I do are based on how much did a single player control the action of what happened in that season. Things that went down, how much was one person in control of the people that got voted off in the order that they got voted off and set the table for whatever final two, final three there was. When I'm looking at players, to me, that's who is the person that has the best chance to win in a given season.
Okay.
Not necessarily the specific season that they're in. And in Rob and Parvati and Sandra, and I'm leaving Kim Spradlin out of this just because she only did it once. I feel like for me to add Kim to that mix, she's gotta, I'd love to see her do it again.
Kim's a conversation for another day.
Right. But to me, there's something that's somewhat special about those three players. Because I do think that Rob, in terms of strategy, is really top notch. He's a guy that, love him or hate him or whatever. And I've actually been called out for my Boston Rob love quite a bit as well. And who would have thought that?
Yeah, looking forward to volume three.
Who would have thought that?
Yeah.
But to me, Rob is somebody that he's either going to go out early, or if you leave him around long enough, he's going to go very far into the game. I think that he's probably the most dangerous person to have out there. You also have Parvati, who I also think is incredibly dangerous, that she has such an amazing social game. And so with Parvati, even though if I was going to knock it a little bit, I feel like when Parvati doesn't like you, she doesn't always put out the effort to make you feel like. There's a couple of times where she does stuff like with Eliza in the fans versus favorites, where she sort of like just doesn't associate with them. Some of the heroes as well. I think that's a little bit of a knock on Parvati's game. I think that if she could tie that up, I think you'd really have a perfect survivor game there.
Yeah, perfect social player.
Perfect social player. Yeah. And then for Sandra, she's just the person who you can't get out. And so she's the perfect person that sort of embodies Outlast.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of her. There's always going to be a different, shinier object. And whether it's her body type and her attitude and whatever sort of innate character traits that she brings into the game, that's what makes her so dangerous. So I think that those are the three most dangerous players in terms of who I'd be afraid of losing to. And I think there are other people that I would definitely put into that mix. A Suri is certainly somebody that's high up, that somebody who I would definitely be afraid of. This person is a major threat to win the game, but not necessarily all of them are people that are going to control the game.
Right.
And so there are going to be people that are threats, but sometimes they're a threat because they are going to somehow end up in the end of the game. And that's just who they are. And that's what Sandra is. But that's why I don't rank her particularly high in my winner rankings in terms of dominance. Right. Sandra could win a third time and be the 14th best winner.
Right.
But when you start to look at, boy, she is an extremely dangerous player, but not a dominant player.
So can I ask the question that at least half the people who have listened all the way through two volumes of The Evolution of Strategy are probably asking?
What's that?
If this is about dominance, what about JT? This has been something that's come up a lot since the Token Genes chapter. Why is JT not higher than he is? And not, again, not to spoil all of the rankings, but he's not as high as a lot of people thought he would be.
The thing that was hard for me with JT in the rankings was,
I believe someone accused you of having Stephen Fishback holding a gun to your head at the time.
No.
Stephen is a nonviolent person, a pacifist.
Yes, he was not here. For me, I think the thing about JT, while he did play a fantastic game, for me, it was harder to pick apart what was JT and what was Stephen. And even though I don't factor in heroes versus villains in my rankings of what they're going to go on to do, it's impossible for me to Men in Black that out of my mind of what happens when Steven isn't around.
Right. I think what's interesting about the JT thing, and you mentioned this during Token Genes, is heroes, villains, JT is your first JT. One of the great things about Evolution of Strategy, especially the second volume, was there were a lot of seasons that you didn't know very well. Some seasons you hadn't seen, other than bits and pieces of. And Token Genes was one of them, right?
Right.
Your first memory of JT is Heroes, Villains, JT. As much as you're trying to keep that out of the picture, was that creeping in?
Sure. I'm a human being. It's impossible for me.
Yeah.
So for me to parse away the conjoined twin, which is Steven and JT's game in Token Genes, it's nearly impossible for me. And when we're ranking him against people who were less of a pair, even though they had tight alliances, but ultimately they got rid of their alliances, it's harder for me to be able to do that. Like, JT was really great in Token Genes, and Steven is bad in that final tribal council.
He's horrible.
He's bad.
So bad.
And JT wins in a shout out.
Yeah.
Probably if I had to do it over again, I think I would have ranked JT a spot or two higher.
Yes. But you've admitted this in the time since the chapter was released.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if I had, I don't know how people would feel about this. I would love to, after it's all over, because I feel like I see tears in that, and I feel like I missed it, like with a couple people, like having them a spot too high or a spot too low. I would like to do a second pass of, if I had to do it over again, I would drop this person down a ranking, move this person up to make that more of, these were the whatever winners who did this, and these were the whatever winners who did this, because I feel like I'm seeing that in my rankings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any regrets taking on the winner rankings?
A little bit.
You knew it was going to be controversial. You knew it was going to be a big undertaking. I think one of the things that I said at the time as to why I don't really weigh in with my personal opinion too much, although I do. I mean, I say that I don't, but I absolutely do. It's a stressful exercise for one. And in the end, it's almost arbitrary, right? I mean, you say this in the I think it's the Nicaragua chapter, not to spoil things too much, but you talk about how we're talking about people who've won Survivor. You know, even your worst winner, it's an impressive feat to make it all 39 days and win the sole Survivor title. Ranking them in order of whether it's dominance or in terms of your favorites or whatever criteria you have, it's such a tough exercise. Has it been too tough? Has it been one that you've regretted taking on?
I wouldn't say that I regret taking it on. The thing that sort of bums me out is that I do put a lot of thought into it, but we're ultimately basing it on 13 hours of television in a season. And really, it's down to 42 minutes. And how many times was that person even on the screen? So Everybody has their favorites and it's totally subjective. And you could make your list however you want to make your list. I'm just telling you guys what I'm seeing on the screen and whatever stupid reasons I have. This is the reason that I'm putting the list in this. I don't like it, though, when people, like, out of context, like, I am wringing my hands trying to figure this out. And then if you just say to somebody on Twitter, like, hey, did you hear you're number 16? And it's like, well, F Rob Cisternino.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah. So that bums me out about it. And that that's the only time that I say, boy, I wish I never did this because like, you know, it wasn't meant for the 140 character conversation. It was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those conversations are like 20 minutes sometimes.
Yeah.
And honestly, they're like 10 hours leading up to that 20 minutes off the time.
I mean, that's sort of like taking a movie or a book or something and just telling somebody like the last line of like, oh, well, that was a stupid book.
Here's looking at you, Rob.
Yeah. So that's the thing that I don't love about that.
I don't know if that was basically the last line of Casablanca. I think I mean.
Got it.
Maybe I just screwed it up.
Spoilers. Let's go to another question that came to us from Facebook. This is from Zach Vossler, and it's a long question, but a lot of people, I think, had this same question. It says, my question is about the male and female winners. After 20 seasons, there's 11 male and 9 female winners. Surprising how it just worked out so evenly. What's even more surprising to me, though, in your top 10 winners, you have more men than women. And while in your bottom 10, you have more women than men. I think it just goes without saying that men and women play Survivor very differently, and the women who won had to play very differently from the men who won. But your list seems very Probstian in that you reward the alpha type men who dominate the strategic conversation while low-lighting the women who play more subtle games. Just by way of example, you knocked Parvati points because she was not in the forefront post-swap in Micronesia, even though the new Arai wasn't going to tribal council during that period. What was the edit going to show anyway? Yet Tom Westman, who, as you acknowledge in chapter 20, didn't even play a pre-merge game, continues to do well in your rankings. How are you accounting for the differences in the male and female winners games? And are you taking these differences into consideration? Do you think that there's a possibility the framework is flawed? And that you might be looking at all of the winners through a similar male-dominated lens? Okay, that's from Zach.
Okay.
Very tough fair question.
Hard questions from Zach.
Very fair question.
Hitting you with the hard talk. He's a real Bryant Gumbel. That's coming at you hard, like a hard journalist.
Look, I appreciate the question. And it's a very good one.
I just called Brian Gumbel a hard journalist.
Jersh. Thank you. How did you know?
How did you know? It's obvious. Yeah. We've talked about you a lot.
In terms of the winner rankings and the number of male winners outnumbering the female winners at the top of the list, what I am looking for, again, is dominance and control in the game. Now, how am I getting that information? I'm watching the TV show. So if the TV show is favoring giving us confessionals and dialogue from more of the alpha men who are in the game, especially the ones who win the game, I can't read into or know stuff that's not on the screen. So there's a little bit of a bias there. If you are already putting forth the argument that the show has that favoritism, I can only watch the show. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
Secondly, in terms of the last conversation that we just had, in terms of splicing who had the most control versus who was the hardest to beat, those are two different things in my mind, where somebody who could have been very hard to beat because they were under the radar and they weren't a threat and played a very smart game, but didn't exert a lot of control on what was happening in the season, that person's not going to grade out as high as somebody who might have been a target a lot of the way, but really decided who was going to be going home next.
You have a good example of that for you, for somebody who is a female winner who fits that mold for you, somebody who you strongly respect their game, but didn't necessarily place high in your rankings. Like someone who's like a good example of what you're talking about.
Take somebody like Danny, for instance.
Yeah.
Okay. Or even Sandra that we go back to, where Sandra is somebody who is probably the most difficult survivor to clip, to take off.
Yeah.
But she really doesn't control the boot order. So I'm looking at dominance in the season and what are the moves that these players are making. And so I don't, in my rankings, in terms of the dominance of the winner, the dominance of the win, in this calculation of strength of victory that I'm looking at, that's the criteria. Mm-hmm. So there have been more alpha males that have controlled the boot order than there have been female players.
Yeah.
Again, through two volumes. That's all you've heard.
That's all you've heard. Yep.
The game has evolved. And I think as the game continues to progress, I think we have more women who are playing the game in a more aggressive way and having more control over what's happening in the last 5 years than we did, say, in the first 10.
Okay.
Is that fair to say?
I don't want to spoil anything.
But I want, hold me accountable. Hold my feet to the fire. Be the person that's listening to this and yelling at me right now.
Oh, you want me to?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, who knows what they're shouting right now. I'm sure somebody's shouting something.
What's the next question that they want to hear me answer in terms of this? Because if it's the Sandra thing, the number one, there's two things that throughout the history of Survivor and Rob as a podcast and the Evolution Strategy, I get two things of both sides of Sandra is the worst player of all time. Why is she ranked so high? And Sandra is the best player of all time. Why do you hate Sandra?
Right.
And the same exact thing about Russell Hance.
Yeah.
Russell Hance, and usually it's the same people that are arguing both sides of this, the people that say that Russell Hance is the best player of all time and there's a bitter jury and Sandra is the worst player of all time.
Right.
And then it's the opposite people. Sandra is the best player of all time and Russell is the worst player of all time. And these people have been constantly at war for the last 5 years.
Yeah, that Samoa Final Three and especially that Heroes Villains Final Three, it's a real hotbed of conflict.
And that's the exact point that we're at right now in the Evolution Strategy in terms of the release.
Yeah,
so we are just getting killed by people who feel like we were too hard on Russell. We be killed by people who say we were too hard on Natalie White.
You can't win. You can't win. You can't win. And hey, I was not hard on Natalie White.
But in some way, I feel like we're doing a good job because I am getting tweets from people who say that we gave Russell too much credit and people who say we were too hard on Russell.
Right.
And do we know anything about Russell's game? We don't understand Russell's game. And people who say we didn't give enough credit to Natalie.
Yeah, you're getting it from every side.
So I think that's a good sign.
I think with the Sandra thing, and I believe it's my good pal Antonio Mazzaro who said, but this is just going off of memory. He wrote this on Facebook. Something about, is Sandra's win, is it weighted for the fact that she won probably the hardest season to win in terms of the level of competition, going up against legends, heavyweights, titans of Survivor? Is her win weighted anymore? You ask me, what is somebody shouting into the iPhone right now as they're listening to this? I think that might be a question that's worth pondering.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I don't think I've factored that in too much. I really don't. And that's probably an oversight on my part. And maybe that's something that I go back and I look at. If I move anybody up or down a notch in the rankings, that right. might be something that a good point to go back. And I don't think I haven't re-listened to that in the last couple of days of where how I ranked Sandra in Heroes versus Villains, but that's probably a good thing to pay attention to if I considered that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I did at the time. Yeah. We get very weary at the end of these. I mean, you know, that's the last thing we do is right. rank the winners. And obviously that's been the most controversial part of it because everybody has their own list.
And I think the deeper you get into the show, the further into Survivor you get, the longer this thing goes on. As we're approaching season 30, I think it'll probably just get more and more contentious. But Rob, you made your bed. You're lying in it. I appreciate that. I hope that, people who do listen to this, I think at the very least they give you, if they disagree with you, the people who actually listen to this more often than not in my experience, and there could be people who are just talking to you and not talking to me as well. I think that they at least respect the fact that you do talk it through. You give your reasons. You do articulate why you're feeling the way you're feeling. Nobody has to agree with you. Nobody has to like what you're coming out with, but it's hard to say that you're not at least thinking it through all the way. And for my money, I don't always agree with where these people shake out on the rankings. I've been fairly vocal, and I'm sure he's a hell of a guy. I know he's a friend of yours. I've always said, I think you've got Aris high. You know, I've got my disagreements with some of these spots on the rankings, and I'm sure that.
And I'd like to just add, I don't think I have ours that high.
I know you don't, and I think he should be lower. And again, I'm sure he's a hell of a guy. I was talking to somebody about it today. Actually, he came up. I think that he is a guy who seems to understand Survivor so much better outside of playing Survivor than when he's actually in the game. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I have disagreements with you as well, but for me, when we get to that part, and it is the most exhausted point in every chapter in recording these things, it's hot, it's sweaty, we have our air conditioners off. I don't know about your room, Ron, but down here in the basement, it's really toasty. I get really sweaty and famished and tired, and I need a nap at the end of these chapters. But I'm riveted when we get to the winner rankings. I'm always nervous. Are you going to say something insane? Are you going to do me right? Are you going to get it right? Are you going to get it wrong? And I'm as invested in it as anybody. So right or wrong, agree or disagree, I find that part of the chapter to always be the most riveting part. And I hope that you listen to the noise, that you're hearing what people are saying, that you acknowledge the feedback and all of that good stuff. I think it's great to incorporate it. Keep doing what you're doing. It's very entertaining. It's very fun and it's very insightful, even when you're wrong.
Will you, at the end of 30 seasons, will you give us your 30 winner ranking?
It's tough.
You endorsed people for Survivor Second Chance. Why wouldn't you make a winner ranking?
Because maybe I can make a buck writing an article about
it. Oh, okay.
That's the most mercenary thing I've ever said. I don't know. I think one of the things that's difficult about that for me at this point is if I was going to do that, I should have committed to it along the way. I should have been writing a shadow winner ranking mm-hmm. as we've been going.
Okay, and I'm so you would do it. It's just... we're just negotiating now at this point.
Yeah, right. We're negotiating. This is volume four, and I'm getting the higher percentage on volume four if we're doing that.
Okay.
Fair enough. That's the plan.
Okay, good. No, I didn't know that was the reason. I thought you were like morally opposed to do.
No. And I'm mostly kidding. I'm partly not kidding. I might write this article at some point. I might put my opinion out there at some point. But I do stand behind what I often say is that I do think that it's in the end, it's fairly arbitrary. You win Survivor. Good on you. You did something right. even people who are lower on the end of the spectrum, in your book, in my book, those guys did something right that nobody else did. And I think that even though the weakest winner is deserving of praise. So for me, it's hard to break that down. And I'm far enough away from a lot of those earlier seasons that it's tough. But at the end of this thing, maybe I'll take a shot in the dark. You might be able to twist my arm.
All right.
And I'll add that I am opinionated on a bunch of these winners when you're going through them. I've definitely gone to bat for people both ends of the spectrum. And I know that you know that to be true in the first two volumes and certainly in the third. I've been passionate about certain people.
Here's another question from Jeremy Berman, who wants to know, we didn't hear you guys discuss what would have happened if JT's idol letter worked, because based on the evidence they had, a women's alliance did make a lot of sense. And if the plan had worked, we'd really be calling it the greatest move of all time. This was something that in the past week we've taken some criticism about. We scoffed, I guess, quite a bit about the JT idol letter writing pass off to Russell Hance.
Right, and we didn't talk about the upside of it.
We didn't talk it through enough for some people about what if it would have worked.
All right, are you ready to do that right now?
Sure.
So I think the first place that I would start with is they were so wrong. You know, it so much has to change. We have to be talking about a totally different reality for us to even being able to acknowledge that this could have been the best move. Like, Russell really had to be on the outs, and he was not. So talking it through as something that could have been the best move in Survivor history is making an assumption, basically rewriting history, rewriting the season of Heroes Villains into something that it was not. So I think for me, that's one thing to acknowledge right up front. The other thing is I have issue with the idea that based on all of the evidence that the heroes had, a woman's alliance was obvious. And I think I talk about that extensively in the Heroes Villains chapter. I think I talk extensively about how Russell's kind of blowing the cover. I talk extensively about how Russell is, he rubs salt in some heroes' wounds here and there during that pre-merge portion of the game where it's not necessarily clear-cut to me. And granted, we have the benefit of knowing the full picture from watching a season that Russell is in on the alliance with these women. But the way that he's talking in front of the heroes, for me, it feels like you got to be fairly dense to just automatically assume that Russell is not in on what's going on over there. So those are two things that I take issue with right up front. And I think that that's a big piece of why I don't think that we talked about the potential upside of the move too much, because it supposes a lot. Having said that, we love hypotheticals. So do you want to do it? Should we get into hypothetical land where Russell was on the outs and JT flipped him, you know, JT threw an idol his way?
Yeah. Yeah, let me just add to what you're saying. I'm trying to come up with the right analogy for it. It's almost like if you were somebody like on Facebook and, you know, you had sort of a name that could be like a man's name or a woman's name, like you had a name like Terry. And then somebody, for whatever reason, they say like, and they read your bio and like, oh my God, this is my perfect soulmate. Yeah. And then you end up like basically like pouring your heart out to this person and you didn't know it wasn't somebody of the gender that you were looking for. And you basically end up getting catfished over that. But it's like, but what if that person would have been my soulmate? What if I was right?
Right, right. So you know, we want to,
if you took your rent money and went to Vegas and put it all on one number on roulette.
Right, right.
And you say, but what if that number would have hit? Would you have called me dumb then?
So what's the sliding doors reality of this? Like, let's say, Gwyneth Paltrow misses her train is the reality that we're living in. What if she makes the train? What happens if JT was right?
So in this scenario, Parvati has a women's alliance and she is voting out the men one by one in Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about. So that means that what? So Russell idled her out of the game? Is that what he did? And now we're getting into the merge and it's 5-5, but Russell is now with the heroes, so it's 6-4 heroes over the villains? Because that was the plan. So we're assuming that's what happened, right? If the plan worked, or we also acknowledging Russell's fake version of events where Russell stood up with and played an idol and Parvati stood up and played an idol at the same time and their votes negated each other. And on the revote, Courtney got booted. Yeah. See, it's such a butterfly effect.
Russell the guy that they would leave to the end if they were going to be picking off all the guys?
Who else would it be?
Hmm.
Do they leave Coach instead?
I don't know. I feel like Tyson might be the guy that you would leave, but maybe for whatever reason, they don't know Russell
so
well
much,
enough.
So much has played differently if it is an all-women's alliance. You know, it could have been Coach could have gone first because he was annoying, or, you know, maybe Randy is still hanging around because he is the least big threat. So much changes if this is a Micronesia-style Black Widow Brigade reborn here in Heroes Villains. I think that's why it is really tough to talk about the potential upside of JT's move there, because so much has to be different.
But isn't there another way in? If Parvati has formed the all-women's Micronesia 2.0 alliance, wouldn't Amanda be in then at the merge?
Yeah, maybe.
Couldn't she get the info? It's like the all-women, all-women's alliance, but all villain women.
Right, so they turn Russell, but the villains also have Amanda in their pocket, so she's turned as well, and she brings the duplicitous traitor Candace Woodcock, soon to be known as Candace Cody, into the mix as well.
So maybe JT was also trying to protect against that, oh, and then Amanda's also going to flip. Either way, he got a false positive and acted on that information. He had bad intel. It's like, hey, this country has this. Let's go and do this. And it's like, oh, but I got a bad read on that.
Yeah,
if it would have been right, he would have been smart to do what he did. But he got a bad read.
I do appreciate
and a bad
the guts.
Josh.
And a terrible Josh. I appreciate the guts. You know, I do. I appreciate the guts. And I think that it's the kind of move that can only be born from the mind of somebody who's already won the game. You know, a little bit of a, what do I have to lose?
Loosey-goosey.
I won already. You know, I won. This could be a huge
move. Same way that Russell was playing Heroes versus Villains.
Right.
When he had already won in Samoa.
right. So, you know, I think that can play, into it. So I do appreciate the guts, but there's so much riding against it that it's hard for me. It's really tough for me to look at it as anything other than what it ends up being. And another big piece of it is just how much of an unknown quantity Russell is. And we talk about this too, about how Russell is such a legendary villain that he is given a spot on Heroes Villains, a season with 20 of the most elite Survivor players, or at least Survivor characters in the history of the game, sight unseen, his season having never aired. No information given to any of the contestants about how this guy did. It's hard for me to feel like taking a shot in the dark on that guy.
Yeah.
So Jeremy, I wish I could do it. I wish I could talk about it from that perspective. I wish I could talk about it from what if it was the best move, but there's just so much against it in reality that makes it bad. In my book, subjective, in my book makes it bad. In my audiobook makes it bad. That I have a hard time entertaining the reality where it pays off, because so much is different in that world.
Since we're there, let's at least do a Russell question. Jeff McGinnis wants to know, in Evolution Strategy 19, you often asked about the weirdness of the editing in Samoa, primarily because of the dominance of the Russell story.
Yeah.
As good TV as he is, did the show do itself a disservice from featuring one person so prominently for two straight seasons? What lessons can be taken away from it?
Hmm. Interesting question. I don't know if you have this on your list of questions to talk about, and I don't know where I saw this. It might have been a tweet, it might have been on Facebook, it might have been on one of the feedback pages, but one of the comments that I saw stemming from the Samoa chapter was like, I'm glad that Natalie got buried in the edit, because it kind of makes it, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like it discourages people from playing that quiet kind of game. If you want to be on TV, you got to be a bigger, louder personality than Natalie White was. Maybe that's an upside? I don't know. I mean, I thought that was kind of an interesting thought that I hadn't really grappled with as one of the consequences of the editing. I don't know. You, Rob, you seem to have been, even going into the Samoa chapter, you were higher on Samoa than I was going in to Samoa. Where did we wind up on that? Where did we wind up in terms of our enjoyment of that season?
I loved all of Samoa. I loved that story. And I know that some people are down on Samoa. I was really stoked on Samoa. And for
Hashtag.
Me, I think that Russell Hantz actually does a really good job in the pre-merge of Survivor Samoa. And I think he makes the best of a bad situation. I think that his thinking is flawed. And in that, I think he should be trying to build a cohesive group of numbers to go into the merge. Now, it did work. But again, just like the opposite of the JT thing, just because this worked out and he got to the end doesn't mean what he was doing was right either. He right. had a faulty idea of, let me create dissension in the ranks and sabotage my own tribe. And so I will be able to vote out whoever I want. But he should have gotten picked off after the merge. He had right. no idea he was going to be able to pick up those idols. Just like how JT, in his mind, like, hey, this is a great plan. It didn't work. But just because it didn't work, in that case, it didn't work. And it was a bad plan. But if it worked, it right. wouldn't have necessarily made it a good plan.
Right, right, right.
So that being said, in terms of, but I loved Russell as a player early on. And then I loved watching that world start to crumble around him at yeah. the point where they do get the numerical advantage. That's sort of really exciting to me. But then at the point where now he's putting people onto the jury and glue is falling off person by person, and how he handles that, how he handles Laura, how he handles Monica going out of the game, how he handles with then dismantling his own alliance and Shambo, and then ultimately going where we know it's going, where it's we're not having that shock of, oh my God, Natalie won, and we're sort of picking it apart and watching how it happens. I thought all that was very, very interesting and one of my favorite parts of this whole project.
Was the Natalie White victory one of the bigger surprises for you on the rewatch in terms of what you were expecting going into rewatching Samoa versus where you ended up at the end of the of watching the season?
I don't know if I was totally surprised. I was surprised that I learned that there was more there about Natalie than I thought there was going in. And yeah. I thought I was probably going to be more pro Russell at the end of it than I was. But I think that when you watch the whole thing through and really pick it apart, I think that you see that Natalie did deserve the game that Survivor is. I'm not taking anything away from the work that Russell did. If Russell would have won that season, this was a question people asked me, where would Russell have been on my winner rankings? Russell right. would have actually been very high on yeah. the rankings based on the criteria that I use of who controlled the outcome of what happened the most.
Top five, baby?
I think so, surely.
Yeah.
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 Because he was so, such a presence, such a force yeah. in that game. But Russell didn't understand that the game that he was playing isn't the one. And people say, well, it was just a bitter jury. It was the jury was bitter. But those people 39 days earlier did not know Russell Hance from a hole in the wall. Yeah. And 39 days later, they decide, hey, we're going to be bitter towards that man.
Yeah.
That man, we hate him.
Yeah.
We hate, they didn't know him at the start on day zero. They didn't know him from a hole in the wall. They liked him. They thought he was probably a nice guy at one point. And then by the end
he
of it,
lost his dog in Hurricane Katrina. Yeah. What's
we hate his
like?
Guts. Anybody but him.
Yeah.
Who's
yeah.
she? She was good. She was fine. We
she
liked
was
her.
Fine. She was nice. So it turned out to be nice.
If the jury is bitter, and I'm not saying that the jury isn't bitter, but they're bitter because of things that he did, which is not how you win Survivor. And there will be juries that are less bitter and more forgiving, but this group of people that he was out there with got a good hate into him.
Yeah. yeah.
Because of things he did. It wasn't that lies that were told about him, as far right. as we know.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, one of the things
6,000 comments on this podcast.
6,000?
There will be.
Really?
I'm predicting.
Wow.
Most cool. comments are we hit Russell Hance, Sandro, winners uh-huh. rankings, men versus women.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
One of the things that you and I get into a lot, and it was a big piece of the conversation during the Brian Heidick and Tom Westman winner ranking at the end of volume one. How is Tom going to be able to clear Brian? What does that come down to typically?
For me, when I look at those two players in particular, I look at what people thought about them. And I feel like that Brian, while he had a lot of control over his season, I think that Brian got more votes that were like, well, I don't want to give it to Clay.
Right.
I think he had more of those. And he only beats Clay by one vote. And Clay is probably one of the all-time GOATs in terms of people that he was just a guy that people did not love out there.
Right.
A couple people did. Penny did, certainly.
Right.
But for Tom, I think that there were more pro-Tom votes. Really, I think Kobe is the only anti-Tom vote that Katie gets.
Yeah.
And it's not so much a pro-Katie vote, with all due respect to Katie Gallagher.
Right. And I think what I'm driving at is...
I got a Gallagher mention in the podcast, right?
Oh, Gallagher mention! How about that? We fit it into Volume 3, everybody, by the way.
Yeah.
Just the other day. I guess what I'm getting at is there have been close calls along the way. There have been close calls in the conversations about players and how they stack up against each other, and the winners and how they stack up against each other. And what does the tie break tend to be?
Who's the better person? Like, who's the person that people are friends with after the show?
Yeah,
because like, really, it comes down to the social game for me.
And I think that, you know, you can roll your eyes at that, and you can give the middle finger to your iPhone right now, and you don't have to love that. But that's the game. It really is. And I think that one of the things that I've taken away stronger than ever, having gone back and rewatched all these seasons chronologically, for first time I've done all of this chronologically as a rewatch. One of the things that I have really taken away from it is just how critical that piece of it is, the social piece, as Denise Stapley calls it, the social piece. It is such an important part of the game. It is the most important part of the game in terms of sealing the deal on the win more often than not, I think. And I don't think that that is ever more clear than in Russell Hantz versus Natalie White. We call Russell during that chapter. We say that we don't call him up on the telephone, and that would be interesting. We talk
what do you
about,
want, Wiggler?
No, we don't want to call Russell. We talk about Russell. We describe him as somebody who, has anyone played this hard? Has anyone played as hard as Russell since Robin All-Stars? I think that that is the closest that we come to in thinking about it. And you're talking, you even mentioned it a few seconds ago, the work that Russell puts in to his victory. And I think, knowing Rob Cesternino, what you value out of Survivor, Russell Hantz would have loved to have put you on his jury. You would have voted for Russell Hantz. Fair to say?
No, it's not fair to say. Somebody asked me this recently, would I have voted for Russell Hantz? And if Russell Hantz humiliated me, I don't think I would have voted for him.
Yeah.
If I was one of the glue people.
I think maybe I would have.
And you would have voted for him if he humiliated me?
If he humiliated you, I would write Russell Hantz down 4 times and say, please count as 4 votes.
If he embarrassed me in front of everyone, if I got voted out by Russell in a way that it was like a respect thing and I felt like, okay, I get that. But if there was
he votes you out in like a Fincher style.
Yeah, Fincher voted for him.
Yeah, you're going to vote for him. And I'd like to think, I think that that's something that, you know, you and I, we view Survivor as a game. We are good with that. For the most part, it's fair play. Even when Johnny's not involved, for the most part, it's fair play. But there is a line you can cross. It's hard for me to imagine what that would be, crossing it with me. I feel like I would like to think that I would reward hard gameplay, innovative strategic moves, all of that stuff, but maybe not. Maybe not. You know, I would like to say that I would vote for Russell Hantz, but that doesn't necessarily mean, that doesn't necessarily take anything away from what Natalie does, because there's so many people on that jury who wouldn't reward Russell for what he did. And I think that that comes down to the social piece. And I think for me that that has just been the most illuminating part of going back and watching. If you don't treat people with respect, it can really come back and bite you in the ass, and you've got no one to blame but yourself. And if you don't understand that, then there is a crucial part of Survivor that you fundamentally don't get.
There is a way to put people out of the game where they can accept it, maybe not feel good about, but they can accept it. And there's a way to put people out of this game that makes them feel stupid or dumb or helpless and disrespected. And if you do that to enough people, you won't win the game.
Or if you do that, be Todd Herzog and turn that person around at the final tribal council.
Yeah. And in fairness, I feel like Russell did try to do that with Laura Moret, and it did not work.
He tried. But he came into that so hot and arrogant. What's the percentage he thought that he had when Dave Ball does the gut check?
I don't know.
Yeah, I forget the exact breakdown of that.
Well, I think he might have been drinking that breakfast champagne.
Yeah, that was also a bad idea. I think that's another lesson that we don't talk about enough. Don't drink on day 39.
Yeah, it you'll never goes go well.
In, you'll either go into that final tribal council too hot, or you might kill yourself on the rocks, which is another reason why you should bust Aris lower. Not really. It's not a real reason.
Yeah. The Russell thing is so interesting. It's so polarizing. Yeah. We are closing in on this fall. It'll be 6 years since Samoa. It's just about still the most controversial thing in Survivor.
And I came into the evolution of strategy not really looking forward to talking about the Russell stuff because he's not my favorite. But I walked away from the chapters with Russell with more respect for Russell's game in certain areas, less respect in others, but so much appreciation for him as a force of nature and as a character that we've tagged along through however many chapters into this thing we are now. He's been a hilarious person to have as a ghost along this thing. He's been a ghost.
Yeah. I'm the ghost with the most.
Yeah, the ghost with the little bee hat. You know, he's been a terrific addition to the roster.
Let's take some more questions. Who were some of your favorite players to watch through 20 seasons, whether it be for gameplay or pure entertainment value? And in particular, are there any players on your favorites list now who you really wouldn't have even thought about prior to going through on this rewatch?
Fishmonger.
Fishmonger Lydia is one of your favorites.
Fishmonger. I'm the queen of rock and roll. Shut up.
Josh, you can have as many pancakes as you want.
Do the pancake.
You get unlimited pancakes.
What a bullshit thing that she doesn't get to go to day 39 and eat some pancakes, huh?
Sorry.
It would have been good.
Sorry, she got her fill of chicken.
Yeah. Few people that you and I disagree on harder than Fishmonger Lydia.
Yeah.
Someone said in one of these comment sections about I think someone said, I'm waiting to agree with Josh Wiggler about anything. Can you go back into the evolution of strategy and edit in the Dodo music for every time Josh Wiggler opens his mouth? He only tends to love the characters that suck. I love the Misfits. Yeah. What do you want from me? What do you
I
want?
I
want
to say that might have been in Samoa.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. And I read that and I cracked up. I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of editing.
That's what I said.
Really would be.
That's what I said.
I don't think we've done an hour count on the Evolution Strategy Volume 2, but yeah. I know Volume 1 was about 80 hours.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to crack. We gotta be cracking 100 on Volume 2.
Yeah. I mean, Heroes vs. Villains itself is 17.
Yeah.
So... that's a lot. I can just do the math on it and figure it out, but I'd say that each one is averaging like probably about 9 or 10. So it's probably close to 100 for volume 2.
Don't tell me the numbers. Don't tell me the numbers. Don't tell me the odds.
Sorry about that.
But let's stick to the question.
Strategy-wise. Who popped into your head after this rewatch that you had not been thinking a lot about before? For me, one of the people that is my go-to for this is Julie Berry. I really feel
like... yeah, you love Julie Berry.
I love Julie Berry. I think that she could have been Parvati. She was better than Parvati in her first time out. If it wasn't for the whole Jeff Probst thing, I think that she could have come back on the Survivor Fans vs. Fairies, and maybe at the expense of an Eliza, and she comes back, and I think that she could do... everything that Parvati did in that season.
Not a particularly groundbreaking answer. I was more impressed with Amanda than I thought I would be, actually. One of the big surprises to me, actually, in the winner rankings is just how high Todd Herzog goes for you. And I think that you explain it really well, and I'm not here to fight you on it or anything like that. But I feel, and I said it during the chapter, that I really do think that Amanda and Todd played equally strong games. And I don't think that I necessarily expected to say that at the end of China or at the end of Micronesia necessarily. I gave a lot more credit to the whole of the Black Widow Brigade rather than just Parvati, rather than just Suri. I think I gave credit to Amanda as well. She has this fatal flaw where she can't close the deal at the end of the day. But I think going into it didn't have a ton of respect for Amanda, and I have a lot more respect for Amanda now. I think I said that she is the best player on the Heroes Tribe and it's not close. So that was fun. That was fun for me to kind of rediscover some appreciation for Amanda's game. I think it's easier for me to identify the people who I thought that I'd be higher on that I ended up not being super high on.
Yeah, like who?
like Alex, who that broke my heart. To kind of, I think that there's a moment in the All-Stars chapter where I say the words, I don't think Lex is very good at Survivor. And that crushed, you know, however old Josh Wigler, 17-year-old Josh Wigler, who was a huge Lex Vandenberg fan when that season came out.
In fairness, in this story, shouldn't it be that slit his throat?
Yeah, it slit his throat. Yeah, I'll cut your throat. Love him as a character. Love him to death. But there were people like that who were just legendary in my mind for their gameplay. That on the replay, it was tough. There's more examples of that for me than people who really blew me away unexpectedly in terms of how strong they were.
The other thing with these three-time players, a lot of them that we've seen through now, the Evolution Strategy Volume 3, where we are, getting to see the trilogy of these characters, somebody like Coach, and seeing that in a relatively short amount of time for us of watching all three of his seasons, or an Ozzy, or a Penner, or somebody like that, that we've seen the beginning, the middle, and the end of their story, that has been something that's been also really cool. But that's probably more talk for after we get through Volume 3.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very fun.
Very fun stuff. Anyone that you thought that you would be higher on that you were surprised that you were lower on? Sort of how I felt about like a guy like Lex.
You know, maybe somebody who's another second chancer.
Yeah.
Might be Terry Dietz. And Terry is going to be fun to watch. And of course, he's a great character. And he's going to be somebody who is certainly going to be great in the challenges. But in terms of the strategy, he didn't really do a lot in Panama.
Yeah.
He didn't really have a lot going on. And actually, some of the moves that he was trying to make were just not very good.
Yeah.
And again, he's going up against Suri in that spot and a great winner in Aris. So he's really the captain of sports as well, Shane. And so there's a lot that he's up against, and he's certainly outgunned, but I didn't think that he had too many convincing arguments to people in that season.
You know who is somebody that I'm higher on that I and this was one of the chapters that was a bit of a blind spot for me, one of the seasons that was a bit of a blind spot for me, and then going through that whole season, somebody who really stood out to me in a way I did not expect was...
The captain of sports?
I did like the captain of sports more in Panama than I expected to. And as a character, oh my God, forget it. But as a player, as somebody who is pretty good, Greg Carey in Survivor Palau.
Oh, you almost threw me off. I thought you were going to say Brenda. I was going to say, oh, this is in Volume 3.
No. No spoilers for Nicaragua coming out soon. No, Greg Carey. I've had Palau was not a season that I've gotten a lot of rewatch out of. I think that watching Palau for the Evolution of Strategy might be only the second time that I've watched it all the way through, and that was one of my favorite seasons to watch for this, just because it was fairly new. There were aspects of it that I had completely forgotten about, and Greg Carey being pretty good was one of them. I thought that he was a really strong player, and I didn't know what to expect from him. I thought that he was just going to be sub Burton.
Yeah. No, he was better than we remember.
Yeah. And Jen Lyon, too. Jen Lyon in that final four vote, when she does get voted out, but, you know, is voted out after a lot of hustle and is voted out after bringing it to fire, against all odds.
Yeah, she puts her hustle pants on.
She puts her hustle pants on. So Jen Lyon, that was another one that was a really, really very pleasant surprise to see that she had so much hustle in that final vote there. That was a really nice moment in Palau for me.
Jason Weatherholtz wants to know, Rob, have you heard from any actual Survivor players about the Evolution of Strategy? Surely some of them would have downloaded their chapter to relive their past glory.
Or to find out what we've said about them and tear you apart.
Right. And yeah. Josh Wigler will get off scot-free.
I'll get off scot-free. It'll be great.
And even the things that Josh Wigler will say, I will get the person mad at me.
Listen, you're the celebrity. Get you out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing about that. Survivors are cheap, and very few of them, I think, would pay.
You know, they can hear this for free.
Oh, well, they're not going to listen to an hour or whatever.
Just walk it back. Cheap in the Ryan Aiken sense.
Yeah, it's like Ryan Aiken said that Jeff Probst's water ski was cheap during the Amazon reunion show.
Not Cheapo Depots.
Well, they are Cheapo Depots. So okay. I think very few survivors would pay $2.99 or $3.99 or let alone $19.99 for the full volume of the Evolution Strategy. But that being said, I think there might be some of them. I have not heard from many. The one person who I did hear from, was Alex Bell.
Oh!
From my own season.
I think you told me that.
Yes.
Actually.
And he had actually said through a friend, he didn't hear it directly, but he had heard from somebody that I had said positive things about him. And I did say that I thought he was a big threat to win the game.
Yeah. Who did you say was the better Alex, Alex Bell or Alex Angarita?
I think I said it was very, very close. I think I was higher on Alex Angarita at the time. I felt like that Alex Bell might have had a more fatal error. But if I'm going back to my social game is the tiebreaker, then I think it's Alex Bell.
You know, I get to see the names of you people who purchased the Evolution of Strategy come through my inbox every day. And one name caught my eye a couple weeks ago. Charlie Herschel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're outing Charlie Herschel as a buyer of Evolution Strategy?
I am. I saw Charlie Herschel's name come through on a Gabon chapter purchase. Unless that's somebody getting
an
cute and putting his name on there.
Yeah.
Then I think Charlie may have downloaded it. And I wonder what he's up.
You know, another person that I know actually listened to it was, I got a Facebook message the day after I posted the Survivor funeral of Shane Powers on Facebook from somebody who I thought was going to beat me down. Hey, Amy O'Hara sent me a Facebook message and she said that, hey, great interview with Shane. And I said, it's so funny that you emailed me. I'm just about to release the new Evolution of Strategy about Survivor Guatemala. And again,
I hope she listened to it. I thought we were very kind.
We were very kind to her, but there was a lot of beat you down.
Beat you down.
Gary Hawkins, I'm coming to your house.
Right. Well, her castmate, Brian Corridan, listened to the chat.
And I think she might have told him about it. Yeah. And yes. And
he loved it.
He said it was platinum.
Yeah.
So not even.
Yeah, he's platinum. It's platinum. Platinum quality. And I've heard from good friend of the podcast, Molly Shock.
Yes.
That Lex, who is a friend of hers, Lex has apparently listened at least to the Africa chapter.
Okay.
And liked it. I think.
Oh.
I think.
Okay.
I hope he doesn't listen to All Stars. Or at least I hope that he has an open mind. And I hope that he hears how much I love him as a character. But
yeah. Okay. Bummer.
Bummer.
Okay. So some of the survivors, but very few of the survivors. If anything, it's more like the Twitter drive-by, like, hey, survivor person, did you hear this out of context comment?
What do you think Wanda would think if Wanda heard about A, the Evolution of Strategy, and B, Truck 108?
I think that we have a lot of fun, and we love Wanda. We love Wanda, but I don't know if she would like it.
Aww.
Laura Cookie wants to know, not counting a season of all winners, do you think that there will ever be another two-time winner after Sandra?
Mmm. Wow. Tough question.
Boy. Well, if it's not an all-winner season, they don't often bring back the winners. So especially if we're not counting an all-winner season, I think that's going to be the tallest order here of where the winner is going to be playing in.
Right. Well, I mean, other than Second Chance, you know, we haven't seen returning players since Blood versus Water, which had two winners on it, you know, plus a Big Brother winner.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think we could see another season if they did another Blood versus Water with returning players against loved ones. I could see them bringing some winners back into the mix.
Yeah, that's fair.
But, so, you know, excusing that and excusing, you know, an all winner season and just imagining people who have won going back in and playing the game. Are there how many of these people, and let's just confine it to the first 20 winners. Which of these people do you think could win again?
I think that the people that can win again are mostly the people that are on the bottom half of the list.
All right. I'm going to go down the list of the 20 winners of Survivor in the first 20 seasons.
Okay.
Ready? And you're going to just give me a quick
yes or no.
Give me a bell for yes and a buzz for no.
I don't have the buzzer in here.
Okay. So just make a buzz noise with your face. All right. Yep. Here we go.
Recruit the help of my friend, Johnny Mack.
All right. OG, Richard Hatch.
No!
Tina Wesson.
She probably could.
I think she could. Ethan Zahn.
I don't think that Ethan's going to play again.
Let's say he plays again.
I think he could.
Vesepia.
Yes.
Mr. Hyde. Mr.
Freeze. No!
Mr. Freeze is a big fat no.
Yeah.
What week would he get voted out?
First.
Six. He goes week five. Jenna Maraska.
She could win again.
I agree. Sandra DT. Amber.
Yes.
Chris.
Yes.
Tom Westman.
Probably.
No!
Probably no.
Yeah.
But that's dicey for you.
The people that did such a good job, but so much time has gone by that it's probably, I mean, he could. I don't think it's likely.
Danny B.
Oh, definitely. She's a good Otis. Pick.
Otis.
No!
I think it's a no. I think it's a no.
Yeah.
Yul Kwan.
I think he could.
I think he could. Old King Cole. Earl Cole.
Yeah, I think he could.
Todd.
Yes.
Parvati.
No!
Who's going to let her get close to that money again?
I don't know.
I mean, based on her track record of being a target early on two times before, then she could get out of it.
I got to say, just on my end, Parvati is somebody that I was tough on in the evolution of strategy in the recordings of Micronesia and Heroes Villains. But I have had the chance to interact with Parvati since recording those in person. And I get it.
Yep.
I get it. I absolutely do. And that's another big takeaway from meeting survivors. From my perspective, you've met and talked with a lot of these people and I haven't. And that has probably been beneficial in my my willingness to critique people. But then you meet some of them and you do see something that you don't see on the show. And with Parvati, I get it. I absolutely do get it.
Yeah, very charismatic.
Very charismatic. Amazingly charismatic. Really cool person. Bob Crowley.
I can't believe he won the first time. But yeah, he could win again.
Okay. JT.
At this point, I'd say...
No!
Natalie White.
Oh, definitely.
And you already said yes to Sandra. So more yeses than nos.
I mean, if we're just saying, could they? Yeah. A lot of them are good players.
Yeah.
That they could win again, especially the people. And the people that I said no to are the people that probably people say, oh, we got to watch out for that person.
Right.
So it's more of an indictment of their reputation, of what a threat they are. Yeah. It's all the people that aren't considered to be a big threat, I think, that could easily win again.
Big Brett. I think that, that just speaks to the fact that you're ranking these winners, but everybody's got a little something at least.
Yeah. Everybody's good that wins the game.
Yeah, you gotta be.
There's no person who won the game that really sucks.
He was good.
He was good. He was good.
And Eason,
they're all bargains. They're all bargains.
There's a real bargain.
Let's go to Brandon Davis, who wants to ask, can we expect some interesting revelations to come from Survivor's biggest dry spell in chapters 21 through 24? I'm sure there are some people that are on the fence about volume 3 of the Evolution of Strategy, especially
you and me?
Yeah, especially when Survivor 21 through 24 is considered to be a dry spell in Survivor history.
Right. Although it rains a lot.
Yes, it does. All right, Josh, what could you tell people about chapters 21 through 24?
Yeah, well, anyone who's wondering how we're going to slog through some of these slower seasons, which admittedly many of them are, this is a dark spell of Survivor. And we talk about that very open and honestly as we're talking about Nicaragua through One World. I guess all I would say is, I mean, we're putting Nicaragua out for free. So how about you see for yourself? Give it a whirl and see if it's worth getting into volume 3. I think it is, and I think that the proof's going to be in the pudding with Nicaragua. I said this on Twitter the other day. I think the Nicaragua chapter is one of my favorite chapters that we've done.
Yeah, from all accounts of the people that have listened to it so far, they say it's one of the most ridiculous chapters. And it's actually a very funny season. There's a lot of wacky things that happen in that season. A lot of big characters. I think that Josh might have a record for impressions in a season also in Nicaragua.
Maybe.
He's got a lot going on there.
Yeah. No, Nicaragua was a ton of fun. I was really energized talking about Survivor at that point. I think we had a 3-week break in recording at that point. So I was really eager to get back into the book. And we had a lot of fun with Nicaragua. And I think we even talked, you know, it's not thought of as a strong strategy season by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that we managed to have some really good, interesting strategic conversations on that chapter specifically. But it's a funny chapter. It's the time travel chapter. It's the beginning of the time travel volume.
There's a lot going on there.
If you're into sci-fi, volume 3 is where it's at. It gets really heady, really weird. Alternate universes, DeLoreans.
You might be scaring off more people than enticing at this point.
Maybe. But no, I think it's a really strong chapter, and you'll be able to listen and judge for yourself. Consequence free. Just you'll pay with time. You won't pay with money.
Yeah, just like we did with Guatemala, where we gave that chapter away for free. We have a promo code if you want to listen to the first chapter of volume 3, which is going to be Survivor in Nicaragua. How long was the runtime on that? What was that, like 9 hours?
I think it was like somewhere between 9 and 10.
Yeah, somewhere around there. They're all
at least like 10 hours at this point. Yeah, so you're getting a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah, so the promo code, if you want to go ahead and get that, go to robiswebsite.com/store, and then you can grab the Nicaragua chapter for free with the discount code MOP for Medallion of Power, which we will surely have some fun talking about. The evolution of the Medallion of Power. That's MOP, discount code at robiswebsite.com/store for chapter 21. And of course, volume 3 will be made available this Friday, and then a new chapter will come out every week. And because there's only about 8 weeks until the start of Survivor Second Chance, there's going to be a couple double boot weeks where we're going to have two chapters in 1 week a couple times.
Yeah, well, this third volume, these next 10 seasons, they love their double boots. So it's appropriate.
Very appropriate
that we have at least two double boots in the mix here.
Yeah. And I do feel like we had some fun with those seasons that are the dry spell. I know we were very hesitant going into it, especially South Pacific. I think that we both liked that season the most out of those four.
I was really surprised out of what we got out of South Pacific, specifically because that is a season that I was really low on going into it. And I walked away with a very different opinion of South Pacific than I expected going into it. So, for me, my expectations were definitely subverted as we started going into some of these seasons. And even the weaker seasons tend to have pretty strong winners. And I think that those have been fun games to really chart. You know, to talk about Boston Rob and Sophie and Kim, those are really interesting conversations to have. And we just finished up Philippines, which is one of a really elite season in my book, and lots of incredibly interesting strategic moves happening there. So that was a really great chapter, and we're just digging into Karamo now. So we'll let you know how that goes. I'm excited about it. I think that, not necessarily the most popular season, but a lot to talk about. So the conversation, it's still going on. We're still having a really good time with this thing.
Okay. This show's running long, and I have a segment I want to get to next. Let's play one of the voicemails that we got. Here's a voicemail from Megan.
Hey, Rob and Josh, this is Megan Z. John Kierhofer and his team do a great job at the challenges, but I was wondering what you thought was the most ridiculous one in the 20 seasons you've covered. Survivor Blair Witch, kite flying, the Fiji dance battle, something else? Also, quick bonus impression request for Krista and Jillian trying to pick out where they would want to sit in the movies if they went together. Love to EOS. Keep up the great work, guys. Thanks.
Jillian, you're going to go to the movies with me?
Krista, I would love to go to the movies with you, but I have to sit in the back.
Why do you have to sit in the back?
Because my back is bad and I need to get out in case of an emergency. That would be a huge bummer if I couldn't.
3 hours later, man, that movie was pretty bad, wasn't it?
Elephant dung.
It was dung. Pure dung.
Yeah. What's the worst challenge, Josh?
I'm not going to say the Fiji dance battle.
Bowling.
You know I love the Fiji dance battle. Bowling is up there for sure.
Bocce ball.
Hey, I loved bocce ball. Come on. I loved bocce ball. I thought that was great. The stilts in Marquesas was silly. That was really silly. The kites are silly.
Yeah.
I don't tend to love the shuffleboard challenges either.
Yeah. Especially like in Tokachins when it rains.
And it's that was a bummer. That was a real bummer. What was one of the better challenge seasons for you? China? China was good. Pre-emerge China,
Guatemala. I really feel like the first half of the teens is especially good in terms of the challenges.
Yeah.
Lots of steps, like, hey, let's make it really physical.
Uh-huh.
So that was all really good. Matt Ligori, this is now people requested a lot of different people to show up. They'll request a lot of cameos.
All right. Who did we invite?
Okay. Matt Ligori wants to know that Wanda and Penner are walking up on the beach and seeing Judd and Russell Hance trying to make a fire.
Ah! It's tough. Which of you started the fire?
Now, I love Billy Joel. Billy Joel is one of the greatest piano men. You know, I actually play the piano. Did you know that?
Sing us a song, Penner Piano Man.
I mean, I don't have an instrument on me.
Where's your damn instrument, man? What do you think? You're just going to come out here and you're going to talk about how you play a piano, man? You're just not going to play a piano for us, man? It's a real scumbag movie, man. Damn, man. You got to at least bring a guitar or something, man. I trailed off there. I'm sorry.
I can't wait to see them try to play the piano. And I removed all the strings from it.
I don't even like the piano. The movie starring Adrian Brody is overrated.
And Brody, he can't even spell his name without that little B in front of it.
That little B in the front. I didn't even like when he kissed Halle Berry.
Now, I love Adrian Brody. Adrian Brody and I, we're in the same line of work.
Yo, Adrian.
Is that Rocky? Is that
you? Yeah, Rocky showed up. Adrian!
Matt Ligori says Guatemala Amy is on the chopping block.
Oh, no.
But Rupert is trying to save her, despite Karen from Palau really trying to get her voted out.
Rupert, don't save her! Rupert! Rupert! Come on! Rupert! Rupert, if you do not save me, I will beat you down.
I would want to get Amy voted out. That she's somebody that I wouldn't want to have here with me.
Rupert.
I can't trust Amy.
Great news, Rupert.
Rupert. Zach Vossler is letting us know. Lil was just told by Wanda and Sylvia that she's getting kicked out of the all-girl singing group.
Oh, Lil, I'm sorry. You just don't have the chops.
What are you sorry for?
Your voice, it's a scoot. You're out of the band.
What do you mean that I'm? You told me you'd let me know. And is this you telling me that you're letting me know right now?
Lil, we're letting you go. Letting you go. We don't want you in this band anymore. Let it go, Lil. You're gone. We have voted you out of the band.
I'll start my own band. Boy, I'm having hot flashes anyway. I could use it being frozen around here.
Oh, God.
Too soon?
I guess she said it first.
She said it first. And Catherine Lucas wants to know, who's Rocky think are the biggest kickers in Volume 2?
Oh, in Volume 2?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who's the biggest kicker? Give me some names.
Come in on, Volume 2?
Come on, Rob, stop being such a wussy.
Now, what is a kicker?
Okay, if you can't answer the question, I'm going to move on.
Tyler Fredrickson is going to be the biggest kicker in Volume 3.
Yeah, in Volume 3, but that's not what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
I'm the biggest kicker in Volume 2, and no one can kick as hard or far or fast as me, the Princesca.
Oh, Princesca.
I have such strength in my quads and calves, and my triceps are nothing to laugh at either. I have better upper body strength than even Philip Shepard. I am the Prince of Survivor, Micronesia.
Wow, Princesca sighting.
So he's pretty good as a kicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Volume 2, Evolution Strategies, in the books, Josh.
It is.
We're out. We're out on the Evolution Strategy Volume 2.
Two-thirds of the way through in terms of release, and halfway through the recording of Volume 3, and now everybody is really on our tails.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Terrifying. That is actually really scary.
There is no greater motivation than a deadline.
No, but it's fun. I'm enjoying the pressure. The pressure's good. Pressure's good. The sooner we're done with this thing, the sooner I'm out of the basement.
And then Billy Joel is going to play Pressure on the piano.
But you cannot handle pressure.
Okay, people that are not listening to the evolution strategy are saying to themselves, out. Dodged a bullet with that.
Out on the evolution strategy.
If this is what it's like,
yes.
then we dodged a bullet.
Dodged a bullet.
Okay, so if you want to check out any of the evolution strategy, of course, you could listen to chapter 21 for free with the promo code MOP at robinswebsite.com/store. Or you could always go ahead and see more about it and listen to the Borneo chapter completely for free at evolutionofstrategy.com. All right, Josh, we need a hashtag for this episode. What do you think of, since this will be the most polarizing episode of Rob as a Podcast of all time?
Let's if you go. Think that this is going to be more polarizing than some of those venture podcasts, you're an idiot.
Yes. Yeah. You're an idiot.
You're an idiot.
You're an idiot.
You're an idiot.
Let's go with the number of comments that there will be on this episode. 6,000 comments.
Wow. Hashtag 6,000 comments. Let's see if we can break it.
Let's see if we... I hope we don't break it, because they're going to be mostly at least 5,000 that will be very negative.
Okay. All right. Well,
so
sorry.
I'm hoping for not 6,000 comments.
All right. Sorry about that.
That's fine. That being said, hey, look, we're just talking about stuff. Everybody be civil, be cool with each other. That's all we ask. Everybody can have an opinion. We want everybody's opinion to be heard, but just be kind to the other people in the comments. That's all I ask.
Be okay? Cool.
Yes, that's it. Josh, we will be back together recording very soon. People can hear us on the Evolution of Strategy, and you and I will be talking Survivor soon again. Season 31 is closer than we think.
Oh, my God. Coming right up.
Coming right up. All right. So, everybody, hope you enjoyed this show. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say, I hope. And then we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Rob, quickly.
Yeah.
Can I have a sandwich before I go back to the basement?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.